All right, now I want to take up a piece, a little piece in Pekudei. It's something that Nechama Leibowitz takes up. And I recommend her very highly. And she gets you into the story, the issues, the problems that have arisen, and then she brings down the pertinent commentators. So it's very helpful. She rarely gives her own ideas, her own theories. She'll sometimes make clearer what they're saying. But it's not like, you know, at the end she gives her understanding. So that leaves you, you know, to be creative. Anyways, it pertains to this pasuk, which is on Pekudei in St. Shmos, chapter 39, pasuk 32. Lamed Tes, Lamed Beis. Where it's, I didn't even notice this question. A lot of things you go through quickly, you don't even stop to notice that there might be an issue here. So it says, "Vatechel kalavodas mishkan ol moed," that all of the service for the mishkan of the ol moed was completed. "Vayasu bnei Yisrael kechol acher siva arushem es Moshe kainasu," and the bnei Yisrael did according to everything that Hashem had commanded Moshe kainasu. This is a theme. This statement, in one way or another, occurs very, very frequently in the building of the Mishkan. And I believe Rashi says that it is to teach us that they didn't make any changes. So that itself is interesting. Why, in this particular case, why would we expect that they would make changes after even Moshe and Aaron? It says that with regard to Moshe and Aaron, that they did everything. So apparently that's a great achievement. To be able to carry out, I mean, you see that, to be able to carry out the commands of Hashem strictly in accordance with the way he set it down, and not to make any changes, apparently is a great religious achievement. And it should be a lesson to a lot of the contemporary. Some of the, you know, there's always movements, even within Orthodoxy, so-called open Orthodoxy, to make changes. And that's really... You can't make changes. I mean, if it's a real change, because you're deviating from the will of Hashem, and it's, you know, doesn't only mean with the Oraisis, it means with rabbinical, or the, you know, the way it's been set up, the way it's been done by the authentic leaders, Torah leaders throughout the centuries. So to come along now and introduce a completely different change, and then, you know, what they do is they try to find some obscure kind of source somewhere in the past. That is shinui, that's change. And I think that that it's saying over here that in this area, in the area of building a mishkan, that emotion, man's emotion to participate, man's emotion to put forth his own creative ideas, apparently that's a challenge for certain great people. They want to express themselves. They think that this little touch, there's a nice little touch that's really going to knock them dead. And but that wasn't commanded. So you see, this opens up the door to understanding the sin of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, the bringing of the strange fire. All right, we're not there yet. That's going to be not Achimos. No, it's almost there. Was it in Tzav? No, I'm sorry, I forget. It's in Shemini. In Shemini, so it's a few weeks away. The whole essence, as the Rav explains it, what was the sin? They wanted to draw close to God, and they brought a karbon. But the problem was that it wasn't commanded. Asher lo tziva Hashem. God had not commanded them to bring that. So they brought that completely of their own volition. They were giving, it was beautiful emotion. They had this tremendous emotion to add to the holiness of the day. So you see how dangerous that could be. You got to be on guard against all the emotions, because the so-called Yetzer HaTov, what we said before, the so-called good emotions can also get you into trouble. So it was okay. They wanted, you know, more, so to speak. But they didn't have a right to do something that Hashem had not commanded. That's what the Rav says. There was no difference between their fire and the or their carbon and the one that Moshe and Aaron had brought, or Aaron had brought, except that one was commanded and one wasn't. So that's a significant point. Now, the question that she raises, I had focused on before. She quotes the Al-Sheikh, and, quote, it should have first stated, the children of Israel did, and then have added, thus was completed all the work. In other words, there's the inversion. What he's saying is that the order is not correct, because it's telling you two things. It's telling you the idea that the Jews did everything according to the command of Hashem, which means they didn't do anything of their own. They didn't make any changes. And then it's saying that the entire work was complete. So he's saying it's more logical to say what they did. How first is how they built it. They built it with that scrupulousness, that it did not, there were no changes. And the work was complete. That's the question that he posed. Okay. I mean, I think it's a good question. It does seem to make more sense the other way. Because first it's all the work was complete. Then you go back and you're saying how they acted, how they performed the work. So it would appear that that's the logic. The logic should be how they performed. This is what they did, and the work was complete. I accept that. If anybody doesn't, let me know. Now, what I want to do is quote the answer of the Al-Sheikh. Now, in the article I wrote last week, I didn't include that. So then she says, this is, if you have the Nechama Leibowitz on the Shemos, it's on page 696. He, meaning the Al-Sheikh, himself gives an answer. The following lesson is indicated. Even when the Holy One, blessed be He, assists those who execute His commands, He attributes their execution only to the person engaged in it. In the case of the construction of the tabernacle, the Israelites were not even expert in the work, which was executed miraculously on its own accord through divine providence. Despite this, the text attributes the execution of the work wholly to the Israelites. That's the quotation. Now, I'll tell you the truth. I don't understand what his answer is. All right. I'm going over the answer of the Al-Sheikh, because nobody understands it. That he's saying that even when Hashem assists those who execute His commands, that's what's happening over here. Because he's saying, he's dealing with another issue that the Ramban takes up. And I think he pretty much comes to a similar conclusion. Because the question is, he's saying, the Ramban's question was, you have all this very advanced type of talent, capability, sculpting and engraving, and all of the construction of the Mishkan required unbelievable skill. Like many of the vessels could not be made out of parts, individual parts, and putting the parts together, which is an interesting question, why such a requirement. Rather, the whole thing had to be pounded out of one piece of gold. So I don't think that's easy. So you have to be an amazing kind of a sculptor. I think it would be easier to build separate units, parts, and then put them together. But no. So the question he asks is, where did the Jews acquire all these skills? He's saying certainly they didn't train them in this, in Mitzrayim, because it says they did hard labor. You know, all these types of things that would make it, they would not prepare them in any way for being able to do such exquisite kind of work. So, I think, I don't have the Ramban in front of me, basically, he says there was an element of divine providence, that they had these, it was Bezalel and others, but it does say that these were people that God placed the Chachma within their hearts, that is to say, the wisdom, the particular kind of wisdom necessary. So that means to say that there were people that had tremendous talent. But he says it was miraculous that apparently in a very short period of time, they developed the skills, and in the actual execution, there was divine assistance along those lines. Along those lines. But I think he's working with the premise that they didn't come into the situation with artisans that had the experience and were ready to do the work. I mean, I'm not 100% convinced of that, why it must be that way, but we'll put that aside. That's not the point for right now. So the Al-Sheikh is saying the same thing. That is that all this came about through them. They did what they could do, and then there was divine assistance. Well, there is an interesting Rashi with regard to Moshe establishing the Mishkan. All right, let me continue this. Then I'll remind me, please, to take a... I had thought about that Rashi. Because it was too heavy. No one person couldn't do it. And Moshe wanted to do it. All right, we'll return to that. So now he's saying like this. Even when the Holy One...
Was too heavy?
I'm sorry, that the Mishkan.
What was too heavy?
The Mishkan.
Oh, the whole Mishkan.
Yeah, to pick it up, upright. Okay, and now it was too heavy for one man, and Moshe wanted to do it, and he did it, and God helped him, and God caused it. So it's like confusing to me. So if that's the case, then Moshe didn't do it, and so on. But I don't have the Rashi in front of me. Let me finish this first, so just that you get the answer of the Al-Sheikh. So here you have a situation, according to the Al-Sheikh, that who did it? Who constructed the Mishkan? On the one hand, you'll say the Jews. On the other hand, it was only with God's assistance. In and of themselves, they couldn't do it. So God assisted them. So really, why you shouldn't give them the credit? So he's saying no. That even when the Holy One, blessed be He, assists those who execute His commands, as in this case, He attributes their execution only to the person engaged in it. So I think what he's saying is He gives them full credit, as if they were completely responsible for bringing it into being. In the case of the construction of the tabernacle, the Israelites were not even expert in the work, which was executed miraculously on its own accord through divine providence. Despite this, the text attributes the execution of the work wholly to the Israelites. Stop. So where's the answer? That explains why it says, Vayasu b'nei Yisrael. That if you ask a question, well, did the Jews really build it? They didn't have the talent to build it. So it must be that it came into being through Hashem. So why is it saying that the Jews built it? To which the Al-Sheikh gives the answer. That when you have a situation like that, there's sort of a connection between the activity of the builder and Hashem's providence, the implementation of it. So normally you would say, well, you didn't build it. It was Hashem. Oh, you went through the motions, it would appear, because your motions were not sufficient to have it come into being. So he says, no, the credit goes to you. Perhaps because you did. God works that way. So you have to do that. You did that motion which was necessary in order for God's providence to complete the task, so you get the credit. Okay, fine. So that explains, if you should ask the question, as to why the Jews are getting the credit when they didn't have the capacity to complete the task, and it's saying, Vatechel. No, I'm sorry, not that. It's saying, Vayasu, that they did. But the difficulty that I have is that... I thought the problem was the order, the reversal of order. The problem wasn't how can you give credit to the Jews. The order of the pasuk should have said that they did. They did everything according to God's command. And then it should have said that the work was completed. I thought that was the problem. How does his answer deal with that? Is there a different answer for this question? And I used an idea of the Rav, which I think has tremendous significance. I'm going over it again because I think it's very, very practically important in our lives. And that is going back to Bereishis. And after each unit of creation, it says that God saw that it was good. And it was day and night, and the first day, the second day. That phrase, God saw that it was good, is implied in every unit of creation, except after the creation of man, which we've explained. Because man is not intrinsically good, because he has free will. So he's not good by virtue of the fact that he's created, as opposed to everything else, all the other creatures. Because all the other creatures serve God, so to speak. Lions, tigers, etc., every being, a caterpillar, serves God in the sense that that's what God intended. So they're in the appropriate state that God intended when they come into existence. But man doesn't. Man depends on his choice. Unfortunately, most of the time he chooses to go his own way. Shinui. He goes his own way. So the question that the Rav asked was that it sounds very strange. How do you depict God as looking? In other words, God has to check on his work. Right? I mean, God knows from the outset. His knowledge is perfect. That's Sur Tum and Pa'ala. His works are perfect. He knows at the outset what it's going to be. So it's not like God then has to make some slight changes or this part didn't come out right. Interestingly enough, according to Rashi, it says by the trees, fruit trees bearing fruit. That that's the way Rashi learns. Chazal learned that way. That God's intention was that the tree itself should be fruit. That you could eat the bark of the tree itself. But in point of fact, it came in the creation, it came forth trees bearing fruit, but the tree itself was not fruit. Which seems at least superficially to contradict this. But Ray Chait said many, many years ago that the idea was that the ideal, there's the ideal, and then there's the practical, which comes into being as a result of the fact that the world has created the intrinsic limitations of matter. So the ideal would be a fruit tree bearing fruit. But once God chose that the world should be made out of matter, there are certain intrinsic limitations within matter. Okay, that's not the same thing over here. That's not the idea of checking. God knew in advance. So that's the question. How can you say that God has to check? So the answer that the Rav gave was that it's not to be taken literally. That God doesn't check his work. If that's the case, so why is, what does it say that he saw that it was good? So the answer is that he allowed himself to be depicted that way, as though he checks his work. And then the question, of course, is why? If it's not true, so why does God allow himself to be depicted that way? So basically the answer is because of us. Because of humans. Because we operate under a principle of mahu afata. That is, we study the works of God in order that we can emulate them. That's the source. That's the ultimate model of appropriate human behavior. Not any particular person, but Hashem. Ultimately, any good that man manifests is because that's what Hashem depicts. Those are actions that are attributable to the will of Hashem. So, in the human framework, it's absolutely essential that man should review, because we're creatures of trial and error, and nobody knows. Nobody knows. At the outset, you have a plan, and you may have gone over it 5,000 times, but once you start to implement it, new things come into play. And therefore, a person doesn't know whether something is going to work or not going to work until it's actually working. I'm lucky, see, all experimental, experiment. Whatever, it's a plane, a car, a satellite, and so on and so forth. And it can be made by the biggest geniuses. So that's a teaching to man, that he should never assume that something is going to work because, he's put all of his energy into it and he's got a great plan. He doesn't know. And he's constantly improving. So in terms of the practical level, I think it's extremely important. I think this is a very significant teaching in terms of improving yourself. And that is by review. Review, each person should have a program of review. I don't know if it's once a week, whatever the case may be. But review, there are certain things, certain situations in your life where you subjected to a review. So, for example, you know, when you're first starting out and you want to be a teacher and you get a model lesson to give and you prepare and you plan and so on and so forth. But you really want that job. So I imagine that afterwards, when you go home from the trial, you don't know the answer yet and so forth. So you're playing it back. When you play it back in your mind, you're going to focus in on certain things. Why did I give that answer? And then you want, mess up the whole thing? I should have said like this. In other words, if you subject yourself to that mental review, then you can notice your flaws, which you don't notice as you're going, or just a regular class. How'd you interact? Sometimes you were just too harsh. You said something at the time, it didn't seem bad, but now when you play it back, and you put yourself in the other person's position, if you're honest with yourself, every person has to engage in this process. If you're honest with yourself, then you can notice certain things, you can prepare yourself the next time, and slowly but surely you move away from that being dragged by that emotion. That's the review. The necessity for review. And this could be in all areas. How you interacted with your spouse, how you interacted with your children, how you interacted with your friends, and so on and so forth. A person gets to know himself and gets to know their areas where they do need supervision, so to speak. And then they can spot themselves doing this again and so on. What caused me to do it again, and analyze it and make that extra effort to avoid it? Because now you're aware and now you can see when it's coming into play, when you're about to say that remark. See, I say that's another thing I was thinking about. Do tshuva in advance. Don't do tshuva after the fact. Do the tshuva before. That is when you sense you're about to do something and then you pause and you think, well, I'm going to have to do tshuva if I do it. So I'll do the tshuva now. I'll return from that. In other words, do tshuva from the impulse. Then you won't have to do tshuva from the avera. That's what I wanted to say over here. That the pasuk is teaching us that, because you can't say, how can you say when you're involved in a project that we did everything according to the will of God and we didn't make any changes? How do you know? That's your intention. You're trying real hard. But you won't know until it's complete. Then you look back. And then you review. And then you can see whether you can make that statement. After the fact. Not in prospect. In retrospect. So I think that the arrangement, I mean, it's a midrash kind of an answer. The arrangement is proper. Because it's teaching us a very significant lesson. The lesson that the man, by definition, needs to review. And therefore, he should emulate that. Specifically, that Hashem depicted himself as though he were reviewing to teach us how absolutely essential it is for our perfection. So that's why it says that Vatecha, once the work was complete, then afterwards, the review, it was true that they did everything in accordance with the will of God and didn't make any changes.